Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. You're listening to Pacific Underground, the show for, by, and of Asian people and Pacific Islanders here in Portland, Oregon. Today, we're going to be talking about Portland's very special, unique brand of whiteness.
Special.
Special. Very special. We're very gifted.
Unique, mm-hmm. One might say. Mm-hmm.
Talented, almost. Uncanny and unparalleled. We're going to have a really special guest on today, Zahir John Mohammed, who is an author and a podcast host and just a kind of a public figure, someone who's actually probably been so public in the past year or so that it's kind of maybe been a little bit of a bane because he's kind of like the token POC person that a lot of people have been, for worse, looking to as like a spokesperson for people of color in Portland. So we're going to be getting into race. It's probably going to be uncomfortable if you're uncomfortable hearing about race. So bear that in mind.
You're listening to KABU. You're probably ready. That's why you're tuned in.
You're like chomping at your bit.
Yeah, I was like, let's do this.
Why do you have a bit in your mouth? That's weird.
Because they live in Portland, and sometimes you just need something to kind of bite down on to get through your stress.
So before we bring Zahir on, we kind of want to just talk about some recent goings on that will end up like tying into what we talk about this hour. And one thing that happened just last weekend was the Fire Fest, the Portland Taco Fest. Is it actually called Fire Fest? I don't know.
It might as well be.
So that was a festival that was put on probably by a lot of people, but I know one of the organizers was Nick Zukin of Kenny and Zook's fame, that deli that's in the Pearl District, and also Mi Mero Mole, which is a Mexican-inspired cuisine spot. Actually, I have no idea where it is, but I just know the name. It crashed and burned really hard. It was pretty ill-conceived, I'd say, from the beginning.
It just seems like, well, one, ill-conceived, two, poorly organized.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and so
God.
It's like, wow, you're going to do your, like, really terribly conceived plan very poorly. And then the worst part, for us at least here on Pacific Underground, is that the one person who went from Pacific Underground, Tabitha, she was supposed to come on this morning to talk about how much quote-unquote fun she had, because she like literally went with like an earnest hope that it would be okay and maybe it would redeem itself once she showed up. And then she discovered how it was just crashing and burning from the moment she showed up. And so she was going to talk about the wonderful details of how you couldn't get tacos at the Taco Fest. But I will say this. I spoke to her. She was one of the people that managed to get a refund.
Wow.
So that's the one redeeming thing. But she was texting me throughout the day. I don't know why she stayed for so long. But so Tabitha, if you're listening, Tabitha, you should call in and tell us just a little bit. But she was texting me just like, oh my God, there's no tacos. Oh my God, there's no shade. Oh my God, what does this have to do with tacos? And there's just problematic everywhere. And then I think she just ended up staying just to watch the fiery crash that was the Taco Fest.
I'm just imagining her like walking through the gates. I don't know if there actually were gates, but like everything is just like on fire already.
Basically, but it was like problematic because of the ads that had chihuahuas on them.
Yeah, it was just like all sorts of racist and not good from the start.
Yeah, every vendor was supposedly serving tacos, but there were people selling like Greek gyros. As
what?
If that's a taco.
No, that's not a taco.
I know.
It's not even close.
And then, like, I don't understand why they charged for admission. Like, if you're already paying for tacos, did you know Tabitha paid $14 to get in? $14!
Hmm.
I don't even know if she got a taco.
I heard they didn't even let people in that had already paid for admission.
What?
They were so low on capacity and, like, did not think about logistics at all, apparently. And so they just couldn't let... no one could get in. But anyway, the reason I bring this up is because this kind of just like speaks volumes about Portland and how there is this like very self-oblivious brand of whiteness that pervades like the Portland entrepreneurial and restaurateur community. And it relies heavily on white people capitalizing off of ideas and culture and history that they didn't ask to participate in and are now kind of the default figureheads and spokespeople of. And it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. But one thing that I did want to kind of mention before we transition here is that this Zook's character, Nick Zukin, has been just like livid all over the social media sphere, just on Facebook, on Twitter, on Medium. And that's because a prominent journalist, person of color, Emily Prado, big shout out, was on top of this the whole time, kind of covering like how problematic it was at the, you know, at the beginning from the planning stage, and then was like immediately released a piece, I think, on Medium when it crashed and burned. And Nick Zukin is just like the most like petulant person ever, apparently, because he's just like whining all over social media and just taking parts of Emily's article and a lot of the things she's saying like out of context and just like gobbling those up.
So he's interneting it. He's finding validation from a very limited audience, and because he has the bigger voice, is of course going to get that validation from certain populations in our city. I mean, okay, just real quick, going back to also what Tabitha observed, which goes back to what you're talking about, is the demographic of people that she saw at Taco Fest, as well as like who were just, you know, patrons there. And also the vendors, she was really surprised that, you know, they were saying, oh, these are local taco places, you know. According to what she saw, that the vast majority of the vendors were white, or at least white passing, and that the demographic of the, you know, participants there were also white. And I that really says something to me about Portland, because when I think about like specific Japanese American festivals like Obon or Mochitsuki, like even though we live in a city that's like 80% white, when you go to festivals that are specifically for that community, like way more than half the people at like Mochitsuki or like Obon are Japanese. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, okay, this must be for that community because we're all here. And then you go to things like Taco Fest and it's like, oh, well, you know, not as though white people can't enjoy tacos, but it's like, where is the community that this is representing? Like, yeah, it makes me cringe and walk away when I go to things. I'm like, there's not the community that this is supposed to be from. I'm going to walk away from this.
Right. And like the celebration of tacos in and of itself seems like a very like pick and choose-y white thing to do.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I can't imagine that coming actually from like Chicanx, Latinx culture. Yeah. But maybe it could. Yeah, that would be cool if it did and didn't happen in a very awful, appropriative way. Anyway, I just want to read like something that Nick said on a Medium response to Emily's article, and then we can get into this interview. He comes out of the gates saying, this is my impersonation of him. I've never heard of him. Way to gloss over your shoddy, likely libelous journalism. You imply your original piece that the organizers are stealing and exploiting Mexican culture. You also tell people not to support Gringa Loca art, suggesting the readers patronize other businesses, implying that Gringa Loca is also exploiting Mexican culture. I don't know. It's just like very...
I really hope that's his voice. Just,
I think, yeah, he was actually, he possessed me in that moment and was channeling his actual voice through my body.
Like, oh my goodness. I want that to be his voice just because, oh my God, the words match. Just sort of like, that, like, everything about that statement just stings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is not a good look on you, Nick. And your response to this whole thing is not flattering, and history is not going to look very fondly on you. So anyway, I think there's a lot of catharsis to be had talking more about that, and we'll have to do that off mic. But
it's gonna take a while.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's gonna take a long while. But yeah, let's welcome Zahir John Muhammad onto the show. Zahir, are you with us?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Zahir. So you're in Columbus, Ohio, right now, your new home?
That's right. Yeah, I've been here for a few weeks now.
Cool. So what are your first impressions? Are you like breathing some sighs of relief after having been like delivered from the Portland, I don't know, pressure cooker?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a lot more diverse, and I think that's the one thing that surprises me. I think Portland sort of definitely skewed my sense of the national landscape. But I didn't just feel this way in Columbus, even on the drive out here, you know, in Chicago and, you know, a lot of the cities that we stopped on the way here, I was just kind of floored. I mean, Portland, especially where we live like around 35th and Division. It's a very white part of Portland. So it is very diverse here, which is nice. You don't have as much of a sort of a very public homeless problem here. There are things about Portland I do miss. I mean, Portland is sort of a shockingly beautiful city. I miss Powell's bookstore. I miss some of the food. But, you know, it's home for a year. My partner is a professor. So I was just sort of ready to get out of Portland. And I was sort of ready to get out, you know, very soon after I arrived, if only just because it was just the whiteness of the city, and then also the city's unwillingness often to confront its racism. Not that Columbus is perfect, but that sort of really, you know, weighed down on me in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny that you're like living in a city now that's like named after Christopher Columbus too.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah. Well, can we give you a quick little background as to who we're speaking to on the phone here? This is Zahir Jean Mohammed, who, as you can hear, just moved out of Portland 3 weeks ago and is moved to Ohio. He is a writer who last week in the Portland Mercury, his article was featured on the cover, and his article is featured, was called How Portland is Driving Away New Residents of Color. And, you know, when I read your piece here, it really spoke to me, you know, and this is something that I know we've spoken about in person, and this is something that people of color here in especially in the creative community speak a lot about, and about, you know, should I stay? Do I go? I know that in my time here in Portland, you know, I've only lived here for 4 years, 4.5 years now. I've seen people who have come and have lasted maybe about a year and a half, and they just find Portland so stressful that they leave. And so many of the things that you talked about in your piece really just stood out to me as just such a reflection of my own experience of just moving here and being quite shocked about the culture, and then also having moments where I want to leave because it's not like where I've lived before. And something that you also touch on in the piece I'm hoping you can talk about is the reaction from Native Portlanders and Native Oregonians who, you know, think that the new transplants are really stressed out and are maybe not giving fair game to Portland and all the work that, you know, POC that have been here for a long time have been doing. So, you know, if people want to find that, they can go on to Portland Mercury's site. And again, that piece is called How Portland is Driving Away New Residents of Color.
Yeah, no, I mean, part of them, just some background about the piece. So a few months ago, I told the editor of the Portland Mercury, Steve Humphrey, that I'm leaving. And he's been a terrific editor. And the Portland Mercury, I have to say, has been really supportive of my journalism over the last like year or so. And I said, you know, hey, I want to write a piece about leaving, like a personal reflection. He said, hey, great, do it. And then as I started writing, and I began to think that was a little bit too self-absorbed. Like, you know, I didn't really want to make the piece about myself. I wanted to, in writing about myself, raise a broader, you know, sort of raise broader questions about Portland. And so I thought, what if I interview people? And so I actually ended up interviewing quite a number of people, most of whom didn't unfortunately make it into the final piece just because of space limits. And I was really fascinated by this tension of, like, you know, when I hang out with, like, you know, Jenna, when you and I would hang out, it's like it's something that, like, dominates so much of our conversation, especially you and I being from California. Like, hey, are we going to, like, stay here or are we going to go back? And I know for you, you've got, you know, your you've got, like, a, you know, relatives here in Portland. For me, it wasn't really that case. Like, I don't have any family in Portland. I don't have any homes. You know, I don't have, like, parents to take care of. So I was really also fascinated by exploring my own privilege about just being able to say, hey, I'm ready to leave and I'm just going to leave. But I was so fascinated because, like, in so many other cities I've been to, I've never seen people of color so preoccupied in these questions about leaving. And I saw that way after the TriMet attack. I was actually on vacation at the time in Hawaii with my partner, and I just remember scrolling through my timeline, just seeing a lot of my POC friends in Portland saying, that's it, I'm done, I'm going to leave. This was in May after the tragic stabbing on the TriMet. And I just thought that's fascinating. Like, why is it that this conversation constantly dominates people of color? And so I wanted to sort of give space to that, but then also to allow Native Portlanders of color to sort of push back and say, hey, maybe people like myself who went for a short time, who wrote a lot, who spoke a lot, are part of the problem. And so I wanted to give space to that argument, even though I don't necessarily agree with that argument, to understand where does that come from.
So I think one thing that's notable about your position in Portland when you were living here is that you occupied a kind of space that I saw from my vantage point, sharing space with you kind of in like the media creative space in KBOO and elsewhere, that you're like the podcast guy, right? And you're like also like the traveling journalist that is like from East Africa, but like ethnically Indian. And, you know, like that is like something that I've seen a lot of people essentialize kind of like when they're talking about you. And in a certain way, I think.
Oh, and how he's the token Muslim.
You're the token Muslim as well. Right, right.
Yeah.
In case you weren't already aware. and I'm just wondering, like, how do you feel that essentialization? How was that for you to be that person in the eyes of a lot of white people, but also a lot of people of color?
Huh. Interesting. Well, I mean, I guess part of the thing is that, like, you know, one thing I think I've realized, especially as Trump ascended last year, and I covered some of the election rallies, that, you know, there's almost nothing I can do to avoid being essentialized. Even when I, you know, was not speaking, even when I was, you know, a congressional staff member in Washington, D.C., and I wasn't, you know, my job was to be silent and just to support the congressman I work for, you know, people still essentialized me, whether it was in meetings or whatever. And so I think that some of that is inevitable. And I just sort of, as I get older, I'm 40 years old now, I just don't really care as much. I will say, though, that I think, When we started our podcast, Soleil and I wanted to have a conversation around food and race, as well as Portland's whiteness. I think that one of the challenging things about being a person of color is, I think a lot of white people will take a few people and say, oh, these are the spokespeople, or this is the POC experience. And I wanted to sort of, in my last article, to complicate this idea that there are, you know, people of color, there are Muslim Americans in Portland. My friend Muhammad at the Muslim Education Trust, he loves Portland. For him, it's much more diverse than Corvallis. He's very happy. His kids are happy. He just emailed me a few days ago saying how much he loves it there, especially as the fall season starts. And it's like, so I think that part of it is, I think, the failure of whiteness to understand the complexity of people of color experiences. Now, I think when people of color come and criticize me, I think I would say I parse that on two categories. I think sometimes I think people are fair. I think they're people of color who have been working on racial equity issues for a long time, who were not given the same platform or spotlight that Soleil and I were given at Racist Sandwich, and I feel very fortunate. At the same time, I also think that for me, being an outsider, whether it's when I lived in India, whether it's when I live in Portland and now in Columbus, I think when I got to Portland, I was like, this just is not natural. The fact that, you know, I would go to the grocery store and people would ask me about my name or about my accent or whatever. And to me, I wanted to give space to that. Like, why is it that these things are seen as normal? You know, that you go to 36th and Division, it's all white. You go to 82nd and Division, and it's all Asian. And there's very little interaction. I'm not saying these problems don't exist elsewhere. So I don't know, really. I mean, I sort of really felt torn about that in many ways. And I think our podcast ended up getting really big, and part of I was really worried about people seeing our podcast as just a conversation around Portland. It's only partly that. It's really a broader conversation around race and identity, which food is a vehicle. So, yeah, I guess I was kind of torn and conflicted. And, you know, I think there are people who will find multiple reasons not to listen to me, and that's fine. There are other people to listen to. And that was hopefully what I tried to do in my article, to say, don't just listen to Soleil or I. Listen to lots of people and then form your opinion.
Yet I think a lot of people do hear you, and like with some of the other intersecting identities that you have that we kind of talked about in an earlier conversation yesterday, you're straight, you are cis,
Yeah, absolutely.
you're male. I think that's a very accessible set of identities for people to hear. So I guess have you heard people have people given you that pushback that like you do take up too much space with those sets of identities and maybe take away or challenge or maybe speak over people who are say non-binary or queer or trans?
Without a doubt. I mean, I feel very lucky that a lot of my friends of color in Portland have been very honest with me. So, for example, you and I spoke yesterday about how, I'm a straight, cisgendered man with a white partner. So I benefit from certain privileges. When I book an Airbnb, for example, I can book it under her name. She's a white woman. I don't, for example, for me, a gender-neutral bathroom thing is not as important. I think it's as not as critical for me as it is for someone who's non-binary. And so there's that. There's, I am thin-bodied. I have certain thin privilege. So there are a lot of ways in which I do have a lot of privileges, and I think Portland forced me to understand the ways in which I'm privileged because of my sexuality, because of my body. In so many ways, and so that was really helpful. I think part of what I tried to do was to allow myself to be receptive to some of those criticisms, and then to try in the articles that I wrote or in the podcast that we would record was to try to give space to those conversations, or even sometimes to say like maybe I'm not the right person to have this conversation. One of the last persons I interviewed was a graphic novelist who's queer. And in the middle of the interview, I just said to her, I'm not the right person to do this. So Soleil ended up doing the interview. She re-recorded the interview, and that's out today because Soleil identifies as queer. And so I think that's one thing that, I'm really thankful for the criticism. Now, as about taking up too much space, I want to, be careful with what I say here. I guess I think that there is some criticism to it. I also think that a lot of people of color in Portland are not. I tried at every step along the way to create opportunities for people of color, whether that was in my professional job at APANO, Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, whether that's in the podcast, whether that's in writing, or whether it's including in teaching at the Attic. I do think that sometimes I did see people of color stepping up, sometimes I didn't. And I think there's complex reasons for that. So I don't know. I mean, it's a really complicated conversation. I would have loved to have seen many more podcasts discuss race. I tried to get other friends to start it, and I know it's not easy. I know it requires time and money. So I would like to see more of that, but sometimes I didn't necessarily see that. And that was kind of a it's kind of a tricky it's a tricky issue. So I really don't know what to say. I accept the criticism, but sometimes I feel like a lot of the native Portlanders of color would come after me really strongly, and they'd say, "Well, that's not what it's like to be a person of color." And I was like, "Wait a minute! I respect that's your opinion, but this was my experience. I'm a Muslim man with a beard with the name Muhammad in my last name, at a time in which there is a Muslim ban. The Supreme Court upheld a certain portion of the Muslim ban. It's we all have different experiences, and just as I recognize that to be black in Portland is different than to be Indian American. Also recognize that being a very visible Muslim with a very visibly Muslim name in a city like Portland, where there have been a number of hate crimes against Muslims, that's an experience that really forced me to say to myself, I just don't want to live in Portland anymore. I've got other things to worry about, but I don't want to worry about being attacked. And I did a big cover story for Newsweek's Middle East edition about anti-Muslim incidences in Portland, and I don't think in many ways I recovered from that incident after doing all those reporting on hate crimes. I was like, all right, I'm going to get out of here. And so that's what I did.
Well, so you're sentiment here just sounds a lot of what I hear from people of color here in Portland, where there's a feeling of exhaustion of just living here on a day-to-day basis and having to constantly have race being, or their race and what that does for their lives, you know, being really amplified. Well, and you've only been gone now for 3 weeks, right? In Ohio. And I just sort of wonder, is it a noticeable change for you, yourself, like within yourself? Do you feel less exhausted? You know, is there an actual different feeling now that you've left Portland?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, you know, I mean, I have to say, I mean, like you said, there are a lot of things that I do miss about Portland, the friends, I miss Powell's books. But I will say that, like, I felt like in many ways in Portland, I was not, I hope I try to articulate this in the piece, that I was failing everybody. I know that people are fond of the podcast. I realize that I'm not trying to, like, overly, you know, I'm trying to self-lacerate myself. But, you know, every time I'd write an article, when I wrote the article on CNN about the TriMet attacks, I got, like, a ton of emails, some hate emails, but a lot of them from, like, well-meaning white people who wanted to have coffee with me or wanted to take me out for a drink. And that's just, I don't have the time for that. And I would not respond. And then sometimes they would, like, be like, hey, I'm trying to do the right thing. And that was exhausting. I mean, it was the same thing when we would do our podcast where people would want to meet and be like, hey, you know, talk to me and explain to me about race. And I was like, that never really happened to me when I lived in California. But I also from people of color who would sometimes criticize me. And some of the criticism, like I said, I welcome it and I think it's fair, but sometimes I find it to be a little bit unfair, and I find it a little bit like mean-spirited. And I was like, wait a minute, like, I'm just trying to reflect my own reality and what I see. And that would be kind of tough, you know. It's like, well, what we've tried with our podcast to do a wide variety of episodes, and that was kind of weird. And I think it's tough. I think the hard part with Portland is we are all very exhausted. And I think sometimes we as people of color go after each other in very unfair ways. And I think we should be critical, and we should be, you know, helpful to each other. But sometimes I do find we do it excessively. And I really wanted to focus on other issues. I mean, my life's work is not, you know, the podcast, or is not, there's other things I want to work on. There's other projects. I'll be in India in the fall, you know, covering the election. And I just felt with Portland, like, getting dragged into this conversation, but it was hard for me to say no, because I would just see such crazy things, you know, like that whole taco festival that you guys talked about in the intro. If I were in Portland, I would have definitely written something about it, but I'm like, why do I need to weigh in on it? It's so silly. I mean, Nick Zukin is always up to his silliness. Like, why should I engage that? Like, whatever, let him do his thing, you know. I'm not saying that what you guys said was bad, but like, I would have gotten drawn in. I'm like, I don't really want to get it drawn in. There's so many other conversations I want to have. So, you know, Portland was, I learned a lot. I think in many ways what I learned in Portland was a little bit of, like, on some level, what my parents might have gone through when they came to America. I mean, of course it was different, but sometimes, like, my parents, you know, being Indian immigrants, they go out to eat just because they want to see other people of color at an Indian restaurant. There are times in which I would go out to eat, drive up to Beaverton just because I want to see other POCs, you know, at an Indian restaurant in Beaverton. And
like how I sit in Fubon just to be around, like, I'm not even buying anything. I literally just sit in Fubon.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in Columbus, we just don't, you know, my partner and I went out for pizza last night and we're just sitting there, and, like, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's not, like, perfect. The pizza's not as good, but, like, it's, like, diverse, you know? And I just don't feel like if people are staring at me, maybe it's because, like, I don't know, maybe I smell, or maybe I forgot to comb my hair, you know, something like that. But, like, I just felt, like, in Portland, like, why are people looking at me, you know? And it was just a tough city. I mean, there are good, you know, I know people have different experiences than me. Maybe I'm hypersensitive, but you also got to keep in mind that for me as a reporter, I was also in people's lives hearing about these stories, you know. I mean, just a few months after I left, this Afghani man, 68-year-old man, was beaten to death in a very mysterious, that had a big impact on me. And I wish when sometimes people of color would go after me and be like, well, you know, you're wrong about Portland. I'm like, just give me a little credit to explain what I've seen in Portland. And then if you still have that opinion, fine. But just hear me out, please.
Mm-hmm. I want to take a quick moment to just tell people who are just tuning in and are confused about the conversation or just want to know what they're listening to. This is Pacific Underground, and you're tuned to KBOO FM 90.7. We're talking to Zahir John Mohammed, a journalist and podcast host, among many other things, that moved out of Portland just 3 weeks ago to move to Columbus, Ohio. I wanted to kind of turn to the term POC, people of color, and interrogate that for a second, because when I think about all of this this conversation and the disagreements and like the hurt and not feeling heard, it seems like a lot of it has to do with like articulating this experience, the so-called experience of people of color. And that seems like it's kind of set up to promote disagreement among said community, because it is kind of like a, to me, in my experience, a false banner. You know, it's something that is like kind of informed by whiteness and white supremacy. It's like, it's, you know, we're the ones that have to identify in relationship to whiteness.
Absolutely.
So I kind of wonder what kind of how you saw that as an obstacle or maybe a entry point into conversation with other people of color, and maybe how that informed your entry into starting the podcast Racist Sandwich.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm so glad you raised that, because like I, you know, one person in the article mentioned that as a Black woman, she doesn't ride her bike, especially at night. Now, I had difficult experiences as a POC, but I didn't have that experience. I have certain, you know, as an Indian American, I rode my bike different hours of the day, you know, not really worrying about things. So I mean, I think that was just an example of like the ways in which like I think we tend to flatten this POC perspective, but there's a multiplicity of experiences, many of which contradict each other. But I also think we should give space to people who are biracial, who are sometimes sort of like one aspect of the identity sort of cut off, and everyone just needs you to be like extra POC in Portland. By everyone, I mean like white people need you to be like, hey, well, tell me, you're a POC, and you're like, well, wait a minute, I'm many things. Now, I think with our podcast, you know, we did one episode, for example, I think it was like about Tamale Boy, the Mexican restaurant, where for a variety of reasons, they just didn't want to talk about race. They didn't want to talk about white people. And we were like, that's fine, because if we force every guest to talk about white people, in many ways, that's sort of not just like censoring them, that like kind of forces the conversation. And I still thought it was a terrific episode. So I do think that people of color are at different levels in terms of their own relationship to whiteness, their own willingness to identify as a person of color. I know people of color in Portland who don't identify as a person of color. It's like, that's just not who I am. That's just not, you know, and that's okay too. You know, they don't want to write about race. They don't want to speak about it. And I think it's also important for us to be like compassionate about, that's okay. They might have their own reasons. They might, you know, there are many people who turned us down to be on our show, maybe because they don't have the same privilege. Maybe they're immigrants. Maybe they were because they're Somali and they're worried about the travel ban, or maybe because it's just not how they want to talk. And I think sometimes we tend to think like the most woke person is the person who like calls out whitelessness or, you know, white supremacy. And yes, fine, it takes a lot of courage to speak about white supremacy. But I also think that's just not everyone's route. And the podcast really taught me that. It taught me also how these other conversations are difficult too, the way in which POC identity intersects gender, intersects sexuality, you know? So a person might be comfortable talking about being a person of color, but not talking about being non-binary, you know? And so there are all these ways in which I think doing the podcast, doing the episodes, and then hearing the people who turned us down was really instructive. Like, well, there still is a silence around questions around gender. So for example, we've done about 40 episodes. It's been easier to do episodes on race than it is to do episodes on gender. Hmm. You know, we've done a few. There's just still a lot of silence around sexism, sexual harassment in the food industry. I don't mean to pit the two against each other. So I guess I'm just trying to like leave space to recognize that this POC term is kind of a fraught term. It flattens identity. As much as it empowers people to say, hey, POCs need to fight for each other, which I do believe we do, but it also can flatten people. And I think we need to, when we're as POCs among ourselves, how has it flattened? And how specifically does it oftentimes erase Black identity? Because as I put in the article, you know, one woman said to me, people sometimes want to hear an Asian American talk about race, but they don't want to hear a Black person. Because then if they hear an Asian American, like, well, you just came to America in the 70s, as my parents did. If you're Black, you're wrestling with a much more complex history of slavery and the ways in which the Oregon Constitution did not allow Black people to buy land until 1925.
Yeah, you know, to kind of get back to this, the idea of POC, person of color, people of color, that just that being a term, one thing I find really interesting about Portland, or at least when my personal experience of moving here, was that that was not a term I used really en masse, or really, I don't want to say saw as important, but it just wasn't part of my everyday conversation until I moved here. Before, you know, I was like living in San Francisco, and there, it's, you know, much more diverse place. I hate that word diverse, but whatever. It was, you know, there was more diversity, and there wasn't a feeling so much of like an us and them. And I don't want to say that all people of color feel united, but this concept that there is a very glaring white supremacy, that there is definitely white people having a level of privilege that other people didn't have, was something that was so amplified when I moved here. And I at first was very uncomfortable with constantly people just being like, well, you're POC. And I was like, why do we need to lump ourselves together? That can be a flattening thing. But then I realized that that was partially a pushback with how much the communities here were fighting against whiteness and just white supremacy, you know, specifically. So I just think it's, you know, very interesting to think about that. Like, yeah. It's an empowering and unempowering thing, disempowering very much.
Yeah. No, you know, I'm so happy you said that, because there's actually a paragraph in the article, Jenna, that's inspired by when you and I went out for lunch one day, which was like, I asked you, is your partner tired of you talking about race? And I think you said yes. And I said, mine is totally tired of you talking about
I remember that.
You know, and it's funny because, like, you know, my partner, you know, she's amazing and super, like, supportive of me. But it's like, I was obsessed with race when I was in Portland. And sometimes it was just like, we would be going out to the coast and I would have this incident where I thought, maybe it's racial, maybe it's not. And I just would, like, want to talk about it. It's like, in many ways, what I wanted was I just wanted to get back to hiking, where I don't have to worry about things, or going back to playing, you know what I mean? And I think, like, in many ways, Portland did make me start like counting. I would go into a restaurant and I'd look around and be like, oh, wait a minute, how many POCs are there? Like, how comfortable do I feel here? You know? And that was just a really weird thing that, as a Californian, I mean, California has its problems, certainly, but I never really had to do that as much. Whereas in Portland, I constantly thought of it, you know? I mean, we would get interviewed for a Race the Sandwich podcast at like coffee shops. And sometimes you go to a coffee shop where it'd be like all white. And I'm like, I don't know if I really want to tell you why exactly we started this podcast, because people just look at you.
Oh, yeah.
So I do think that it's funny, because here in Columbus, my partner, she was talking about race one day. She was, I don't know, listening to some This American Life episode or something. And I was like, no, sweetie, let's like, enough of that. Like, that's it. I'm like, I just don't want to like talk about it like all the time. I mean, it's just like, I want to like focus on other things.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of the one of my favorite quotes that unfortunately got cut out was from my friend Garrett Hongo, who's a terrific poet based in Eugene, Oregon. He's older, he's in his 60s. He says, what many of us want, I'm paraphrasing, is not a preoccupation with race, but a freedom from race, a freedom from marginality. Yeah. And I think that's sort of like what I've always wanted. Like, I want to go to a sports bar, I want to watch a soccer game, and I want to just be able to like enjoy the game without someone being like, yo, what kind of name is that? You know?
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I just want to watch the soccer game.
Well, it's interesting. Like, you know, earlier in the conversation, you said when you have people treat you like that, you just, you know, it just feels not normal. It's like, why are people staring at me? Why are people asking me about my name? You know, I have that experience all the time too. And feeling like this isn't normal. But then it always kind of dawns on me that that is normal, that I don't get to decide what is normal. I get to decide what feels comfortable for me and what I would like to be normal. But one thing I personally just, the conclusion I've come to about Portland and the thing that kind of gets me to stay here for my own personal reasons is just like this idea that, oh, wow, I didn't really understand America and really understand its effect on all the different communities we have here, because I'm in my like East Asian privilege bubble when I'm growing up, you know, and then I moved here to Portland and everything became amplified and it became so clear that, oh, this is really normal in America to ask people, where are you from? It's really normal to otherize people and to exoticize people. And that is American. That is American history. And even though these were things that were hinted at when I was living in California, it just, you know, it's so much more diverse there. You can convince yourself that it's not happening. But then when you move here to Portland, it's like, oh, I get it. Because you can't avoid it. You can't avoid it. Just like your time about with like, you know, like how people are willing to listen to Asian voices about race. But when it comes to listening to indigenous people or the Black community, you know, it's, they have less of a valid voice for reasons that, you know, are just embedded in white supremacy.
Yeah. And I think that part of the whole anti-Blackness from white is like, they'll be like, oh, that Black person is angry. Whereas Asians were not racialized in the same way as being angry. We're racialized in other ways in which we're meek or we're like, you know.
We're the model minority.
Model minority. But I mean, the one thing I was going to say is like, that also got cut in the article was like, so I used to go to Salem a lot when I was working at Apano, and I would meet these Republican and Democratic legislatures where they would ask me, hey, what kind of name is that? And I would be there to talk about housing, and I'd only have like, you know, 10-minute meetings with these, you know, elected officials. And I would always say to them, look, I understand that you're obsessed with identity, but I'm here to talk about housing. But let's get a beer or let's get a coffee, and I'm happy to tell you about my family history. And I would love to, I can't tell you how crazy it was to see their faces at that moment. Because what I was trying to show to them is, who is it really obsessed with race right now in America? Yeah. Is it the three of us on this conversation who, you know, who host these podcasts, who have these conversations? Or is it white Americans who constantly want to know, hey, what kind of name is Jenna? What kind of name is Kent? You know, what, you know, you look mixed with something. What are you mixed with? Like, who's the one obsessed with race? And that to me was something that was, to me, that was the one thing about Portland. It's that, you know, whitenessness exists. There's other cities that are whiter, but it's just that for many white people in Portland who have no experience with people of color, maybe have never interacted, as soon as they interact with someone, a person of color, they feel like it's their right to say, oh my gosh, wow, you look, what? Oh, wow, interesting. Are you this? Are you that? Like, what gives them the right to do that? What gives them the right to not just email me, but to expect that I'm going to go to their house and tell them what it's like to be Muslim? What gives them the right? Why should I do that?
For free, too.
That's something, yeah, for free.
And that to me was something that was a very unique thing in Portland. You know, there's problems everywhere, but I think it's that liberalism, that unchecked liberalism, that, listen, I voted for every Democrat since I was born, and I'm solidly for gender neutral bathrooms, but on race, let me, Jenna, tell me, what's it like to be Japanese, or why don't you tell me about what was Pearl Harbor like for you? I know you weren't born there, but tell me what it was like for you. And he's just like, it's like, that is such a deeply traumatic conversation.
Yeah, but people literally believe they're having progressive conversations, and they think they're so socially conscious. And yeah, it's amazing to me here how you can have people who really understand certain concepts in terms of quote-unquote social justice, right? But they have no problem fully, like, touching you and, like, describing you and telling you your own experience. It's a strange thing for somebody who's not from here.
Yeah, I mean that said, I mean, I know we've been ripping on Portland. I will say there are good things about Portland. I mean, you know, the fact that the Portland Mercury let me publish this piece, the fact that they put it on the cover. I mean, I do think there are people who want to have these conversations. And I, you know, I taught at the Attic. I taught a class actually about writing about race and identity. You know, that's on Hawthorne. And that was it. So I think there are people who are really trying. I think it's difficult, though, because I think, to me, one thing that, you know, I also wanted to talk about in the piece was, like, a lot of it comes down to opportunities. You know, if, you know, our first producer, Alan, had gotten a killer producing job in Portland, I believe he would have stayed. You know, he's a Reed grad. you know, he loves Portland. I believe Soleil, if she had a different restaurant experience, she might have stayed. I don't know. Same thing with me, too, on some level. I mean, I was really happy at Apano, but, like, in many ways, like, what I didn't talk about in the articles, a lot of us was looking for really great opportunities. I think people expect us people of color to show up to do these free events, but a lot of the things that you spoke about were opportunities that didn't pay me much money.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I'm not saying that Columbus, like the, you know, the sky is full of opportunities here, but like that I was constantly expected. And so when you asked me earlier, like the exhaustion was also coming from every day being, getting a few emails about doing this, speak to this class, speak to this group, speak to this. I mean, I got asked by a major Fortune 500 company based in Portland to speak to their employees. And I said, sure, I'm going to be taking a day off for this. Can you give me, you know, $500 honorarium because I'm using a vacation day? And they're like, no, we can't do that. And I was like, that's unbelievable. Like,
wait, what did they offer you?
Nothing. They just said, come and speak to our employees. You get the honor of speaking to our employees.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
You get the honor of talking about yourself. Like,
well, they were like, you know, we're really big fans of podcasts. And I was like, I don't really care. Like, this is like my vacation day and I don't get many of them. So that to me was like, it's like this idea of like, why should I? But I think the one thing for us as people of color is like, I think people of color in Portland have a tremendous, tremendous amount of power. And I think if there's one thing that we did well at Racist Sandwich, I think we did some things that we could have done better, is to recognize very early on that like we were the ones, not as in we as in Racist Sandwich, but we as people of color are the ones driving the conversation. Because, you know, we can really sort of understand that we're at a particular time in which, because people of color have historically been locked out, people want to hear from people of color. And this is a chance for us to say, now, wait a minute. Now, this is our chance. Frame the discussion around ourselves. I mean, that's why we had a rule on our show. We never talked about POC. We never talked about Andy Ricker or Bollywood theater or, like, you know, just why give space to that? We mm-hmm. just want to talk about, let's just amplify voices of color. You know, I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with talking about, you know, white-owned, you know, Asian restaurants, but that's someone else's jam. We just want to really shine a spotlight on people of color. So I do think people of color in Portland have a unique opportunity right now, and I do miss that. I do miss being part of that, because I think there's some beautiful things happening by people of color right now, and I think the city is going to change in the next 20 years, and that's why white people are, like, flipping out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the city definitely, you know, we've talked about it here on the show before. We're critical of Portland, but at the same time, you know, there is a realization of the power that POC have here. And especially, you know, like, because we don't have, you know, a really, say, powerful community in terms of numbers, it's like we're a really connected community because we're small and we're able to do a lot of things and empower one another by lifting each other's voices, which I found very difficult in bigger cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco. But because this town is small, I complain about that sometime. But at the same time, I'm able to get connected with my community in a much more deep and like personal way. And like, okay, I know one real quick example is that there was a person who I interviewed here on KBOO for like the news, and she is an actress. And she was just talking about how when she was in Los Angeles, she was only ever being cast as like a token Middle Eastern person. And then she like, you know, changed her name and then she got cast as other things. But she was constantly like put in this bubble. But then when she moved here to Portland, you know, she wasn't making as much money. There definitely wasn't as much like professional opportunity. But there was space here for her to create her own show. Like wow. Her own like play, you know, and that she was able to explore those things because it's not, at least the creative aspect here a lot of times is not as grounded in needing to make a ton of money, you know, and granted that's the sacrifice you make, but there was also space for her to finally like be herself and talk about the things yeah. she wanted to talk about because she wasn't worried about, you know, landing the next pilot and stuff like that in Hollywood. So that's been my experience here in Portland too. So there's the frustrating parts, but there's also this really unique culture for POC here.
Absolutely. And I also find that, you know, someone said to me, I didn't get to use in the article, was like, you know, when I lived in Los Angeles, when I did my grad studies at UCLA, know, there's so many like Indians and Thai and, you know, Japanese Americans that like you kind of end up getting in your little bubble, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like you end up like, whereas at Portland, there's so few POCs that we all kind of have to like, we all band together. So I did like that pan POC solidarity, where sometimes like in a bigger city, you end up getting into small little ghettos where it's like, you know, just the East Asians hang out and just the Southeast Asians hang out and just the, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's, I think that was really a wonderful thing too. You know, and it is a smaller city. And so I think a podcast like Pacific Underground or Racist Sandwich can release an episode and it could be like widely discussed. You know, it's harder to do that. I don't think we would have been as successful if we launched in San Francisco. I mean, it's harder to make a noise in San Francisco. It's such a big city. So, you know, I sort of look at it like for a mixed bag. I mean, I'm very grateful for the opportunities Portland gave to me, but at some point I just wanted to do something different and go somewhere different, you know, for a variety of reasons, both personal and professional.
Wow, we're like almost coming to the end of our hour.
That went really fast.
We can talk forever about like all these things. You and I have spent so many hours on microphones together.
I know. Just, and this is like the first time that we haven't cried on that. So that's an achievement. Maybe Columbus is having an impact on me. But,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, no, I appreciate, I mean, and I really appreciate Pacific Underground because we would not have had a Racist Sandwich podcast if it weren't for Pacific Underground. You know, our first producer, Alan, you know, came from Pacific Underground. We listened to your show obsessively when we were launching our first episode. And so it really had a big impact on us. So, you know, that's why, like, after the article came out, I got asked by all these different places to be on the radio. And I was like, I turned them all down because we do owe our debt to Pacific Underground. So thank you. Thank you for what you've done in the space that you've created. Because I think that's the thing. As people of color, we create things and it creates opportunities for the next thing to happen. You created opportunity for us. Hopefully we created for the next thing. And we've got to keep doing that.
Aw, thanks. I feel a little squishy on the end. So I'm like, oh man, Zahir, I miss you.
I miss the food. My God, I do miss the food in Portland. Colorless food is nothing like Portland.
And well, y'all don't have food carts over there in Ohio?
There are a few, you know. And I'm sort of tentatively working on my first episode here. So that's one thing for the podcast. We will be continuing. I'm going to try to do an episode here. I'm going to Detroit in October. Soleil is in Minneapolis. So that was the thing, too. I think partly for our podcast, we wanted to be able to show that we can have this conversation outside. I'm doing an episode in Toronto coming up. So I'm excited about that. But no, there's no food carts here. You know, a lot of it is just, I think Portland, because it is still affordable, I know that's changing, it allows for experimentation to happen. You know, Columbus is more expensive, you know, and Portland also has very lax, like Portland has very strict laws about what, you know, the big corporations coming in. So for example, on Division, you know, you don't have Chipotle on every other block. Here, you do have a lot of Chipotles. You have a lot of like Wendy's because Wendy's is based here. So that whole Portland law about not, you know, about encouraging small businesses really made for places like Tapalaya to blossom over on 28th and Burnside. You know, that was a really great thing, you know?
Well, thanks for letting me know that I should appreciate my food here in Portland, because I complain as someone who's always like, San Francisco had so much better food. But now I know I should like appreciate a little bit, because I do appreciate that, the lack of Chipotles in the town.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some good things too. Yeah, and Powell's. Powell's bookstore.
Yeah.
I'm not getting paid for Powell's, but like, you know, I made it 2 years in Portland without buying a book above $7.99.
Wow.
Yeah, and I buy a ton of books.
Yeah, that's like if you're a book fan, like the amount of like used bookstores here and stuff, it is good for book culture. So there are positive things, even though we do, you know, gripe about things that I think rightfully should be griped about, and that's what we do here on Pacific Underground.
Yeah, I think that's the thing too. I mean, this is also like, I sometimes, when white people would ask me about being a person of color, they would only want to hear the negative thing, and I was like, wait a minute, like that's also erasing me. Yes, I'm critical of certain parts, but don't deny the fact that I enjoyed going to the Timbers game, I enjoyed going to Powell's, I enjoyed eating at Hot Yai. So that's also like, I feel like a way for us to like regain our complexities to say, like, we can both love and also detest the city. And that's just human nature, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, and so it's like, why do we all have to just entirely love a place or not? Like, I never liked that. Like, white people be like, oh my God, so you hate Portland? I was like, no, not at all. I just hate the racism that exists in some parts of the city.
It's but, like a relationship, you know, relationship that there's, it's never black or white. It's just, yeah. It's complex.
There's exactly. hate it's and so there's complex. Love.
Yeah, absolutely.
One note that I just wanted to leave the conversation on is,
sure.
I don't know if this actually made it into your article, but someone that you interviewed that in a longer form of the article that you sent to us said that Portland was the twilight zone of race, or maybe like the night veil of race.
No, I think that made that into the article, because I remember when I first read in the Mercury, I was just like, oh yeah.
And it really is. We don't have any time to really like pick this apart, but this is something I just kind of want to leave listeners with, is that like it rarely makes sense. It oftentimes seems like an upside down world, and it's not an issue. It's not an experience that is ours to fix. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important thing to kind of like leave with. It's like this is the racism in Portland is it's up to white people.
Totally.
Who are perpetuating it to address it and to take responsibility.
Yeah, it's their twilight zone. We're just living in it. We got to get going. We got to get going. Thank you, Zahir. Okay, well, Jean Mohammed.
Thank you so much. Thanks. This has been a pleasure. Thank you both. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on.
So coming up next here on KABU, we have Threshold Shift at 10 o'clock, a Resident Stone artist series. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints. You've been listening to Pacific Underground here on KBO Portland. We've been speaking with writer, journalist Zahir Jean Mohammed, also host of the podcast The Racist Sandwich. You can find his article, How Portland is Driving Away New Residents of Color, in the last issue of Portland Mercury. Well, you can tune in for another episode of Pacific Underground
in 3 weeks.
3 weeks on September 22nd. We'll be back with a special for our membership drive. Thanks for listening, y'all. See you in 3 weeks.